Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 132, being recorded on the 22nd of June, 2016, with special guest Aaron Barth. I'm Street, and on Skype with me, I have Evan and our special guest Aaron. And unfortunately, Kale's on vacation today. I guess, Evan, he's been traveling quite a bit, so he probably deserves.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure that that's unfortunate. I mean, I guess that's fortunate for him. Unfortunate for us.
That's what I meant. Yeah, but it's a good thing for him. Yeah, I think he's been running around.
Yeah.
But thank you for filling in for him and putting a whole bunch of stuff in the show notes so we have some updates to give our listeners today. Is there anyone in particular you'd like to start with, Evan?
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk about the Dev Test Labs one, because you know, we talked about Dev Test. I don't think we've done a whole show on it yet, but we did talk about it a couple, maybe a month or two back. And you know, Dev Test is this ability to really have these managed images that you deploy. And what we've been doing is we're adding more and more visibility into where your money, where your consumption is going in this Dev Test world, right? Because again, you're really about optimizing what you're spending your money on. You know, I'm still trying to get my head wrapped around like where Dev Test exactly fits in relative to some, you know, any of the just kind of I can deploy and tear down things anytime I want. You know, but I think it's really around the management and visibility, and I think this is just another step in that same direction.
Yeah, I like the way that it can it'll now give you the projection of your costs, right?
Yeah, well,
that was one of the concerns about that. We don't know how much it's going to cost you. So that's good.
Yep. No, definitely.
Hey, Evan, doesn't it also shut down your VM sort of on a schedule for you that you don't have to write any automation scripts and things?
Yeah, that's one of the other big things the Dev Test does. Is it, you know, kind of the thing that everybody does first thing with their, you know, Dev Test type VMs and their standard Azure stuff is write a script to turn them down. This will do this based on a schedule. So yeah, that's just kind of built in.
Great. And then of course the one that I'm sure. You must have figured out which one I'm going to jump on, which is the latest Service Fabric SDK updates and runtime.
But the question is, are you running it yet?
yeah, we're always running it. I'm not in production yet.
No, but I mean, did you already download the new SDK and you've installed the new one already?
The one that I'm talking about now. No, that I haven't done yet. But and this is one that actually even Aaron is. I know he and I talked offline about the Service Fabric as well. He's has some interest from his side as well. But cool. Let me just give you a quick run-through on some of the updates in this particular version of the SDK. Probably the most important is that the new ASP.NET Core 1.0 RC2 template is now there in the SDK. We also support Azure Active Directory for client authentication. And, you know, you could actually now build Service Fabric applications without installing the SDK or Visual Studio. This is like for performing automated builds. You know, when you if you're trying to build a package on a build server, for example, you don't want to have to deploy a whole bunch of things there. So that's now being enabled. And of course, packaging of guest executables, which are, you know, just about any exe that you run in Service Fabric, can now be done in Visual Studio. I think you had to do it manually a while before. So, so those are some of the big updates in this version. And yes, I'll be updating it before the week ends out.
Yeah. Hey, Sujit, are there any updates to the on-prem version of Service Fabric?
Yeah, this is both the on. This is essentially the on-prem version update.
Awesome.
Yeah, these are all updates for the on-prem because the other one, it's I think, it, yeah, they probably just update the server version automatically anyways. This is just, you know, so we can re-download the new SDK, especially the one-box deployment, right, for developers, where you kind of mimic a five cluster node on one machine. And so that's what this enables.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, the other one, you know, and this is like Git's taking over the world, right? API management now integrates with Git, where you can take your API config and just, you know, hook it directly into Git. Which I thought you could do this before, apparently, because the config file for API management is a little bit separate from the rest of your project.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's you know, kind of fully integrated at that point.
Yeah, I think that's pretty nice that you could actually pull the Git, the file down in your local Git repo,
yep.
make changes there, and just push.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is very cool. And then finally, there's some updates to DocumentDB. They have you can scale across the globe. So now you could say, I have a DocumentDB instance, and I want, a lot of my users, say, in the Far East or whatever. So now you could scale. You could say, I need instances over there, and your data is automatically replicated between those regions and your primary region, for example. So I think this is a good step for DocumentDB, especially if you're a global customer, global presence.
Yeah, the thing that I thought was really neat, and Cale's probably, this is kind of his baby, right? So I'm sure he'd be all over this if he was here. But the one thing that I thought was kind of neat, coming from my data background, right, where we talk about, keeping your transactions up to date versus, and the impact that has on performance, mm-hmm. right, versus, letting your transactions on your remote system kind of lag a little bit, knowing you might lose one if you do, but as long as you kind of get there eventually, you're okay. The way we're doing this replication is it looks like you have a couple different levels of what you can do, where you can say, hey, I want mine to always be in sync across the globe, and there's a perfect and an associated impact to that.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other side of it, it says, you know what? As long as I get there eventually, I don't care.
Right.
Right? So then it's really lower impact on your overall environment, but it really allows you to still get there eventually.
Right, there's a few seconds delay, but you'll eventually get there.
Yeah, it's really kind of neat to see that kind of flexibility rather than just this hard-coded, hey, this is what you're going to do, and it's going to have whatever impact. Now you can really dial it in based on mm-hmm. what makes sense for your environment, right?
Absolutely, yeah, that's a good point. Well, I think that's it for the updates for this week, so we'll jump right into the topic of the day, which is Azure Government. I'm just surprised that we just never got taken us up to episode number 132 to talk about this topic. It's kind of odd, considering that Azure Government has been around for a while.
Yeah.
But very fortunate to have my old buddy Aaron Barth with us today, and he's now, he's in a different role now, but Aaron and I used to work on the same customer many years ago, and Aaron, so why don't you give listeners a bit of background, and you used to be a PFE, and what are you doing now?
Sure. Sujit and I worked together for about 7 years with a customer, but then I ended up sort of moving back to working on some diagnostics things within the services organization, tools and things like that, sort of outside of the customer direct world. And now I sort of came full circle, missed the direct customer interaction and working with customers, and so now I'm working with government customers in the public sector, and taking the similar skill set, but I sort of switched a little bit more into the Visual Studio ALM realm, helping people with their DevOps processes and things, and then now sort of spending a lot of my time in Azure Government. My background is more along the lines of performance, troubleshooting, and debugging. Started out going on site to customers and fixing sort of hairy issues, and parachuting in and fixing things. But then sort of graduated towards sort of proactive guidance for customers. Instead of just saying, hey, go fix this and running away, now I kind of was embedded with the customers that I was working with, and sort of the suggestions I made, maybe 6 months down the road, whatever, were then put into place. And now I sort of, was also held somewhat accountable for the decision, the sort of suggestions I made. It was like, oh yeah, that actually worked, or let's try again.
I was just gonna say, Aaron. So really, what I heard is you're crazy enough to stick around to see if your suggestions actually work now, versus before it's like, oh yeah, go to this setup, guarantee it works. No, I won't be around to validate.
Yes, exactly. And now working with Azure Government, with our public sector customers, a little bit more on the early side, where before an application really gets deployed and sort of meets all the criteria for a government application, I'm kind of coming in there and doing like the last mile of sort of locking things down, securing environments, running cloud load tests against applications to make sure that they scale, and then finally going through sort of a process called getting an authority to operate, an ATO, within these government organizations in order to actually make the application go live. So you almost need permission in order to allow an application to go live in the government space for some of these applications and customers.
So, wow. So this is so really you kind of you lay out, this is what we want to do, these are the technologies we want to use, and this is the workload that we want to implement, and basically say, hey, can we go do this in this environment? Is that what that is?
Similar, but now when you move into a cloud, so you really understand and sort of feel the whole cloud movement, where you have government institutions are in control of their servers and their data centers, right? They know who can access what, and they can sort of lock things down. Once you move to the cloud, that becomes a shared responsibility. Right, like, so who can actually touch a server, and the personnel and the compliance and things like that for the actual machines and the disks becomes not the government's responsibility. It ends up being sort of a shared responsibility with Azure. So Azure's now signing up for, I will take care of these things for you. I will make sure the doors are locked. I will make sure that no one can get access to the servers. I will make sure that, we replicate data, across regions, and that we have, geo-disbursement of things. Those are all contracted, essentially, for running an application, and those are the sort of checks and balances that need to be made. And I'm learning a little bit more about that than I would need to typically, but we're sort of, it's really at the cusp of launching these applications, and it's the right time to really dig in deep with these, these concepts.
So let me make sure I understand. So the ATO, that is really more for the ability to use the Azure Government Cloud for some workload, and so it's really getting permission for that side, not so much a specific workload in Azure. Or did I get that backwards?
Well, it's both. So first, okay, you have to certify the environment.
Okay.
Then you can sort of build on top of that, kind of like a layer cake. You can now put your customer's ATO, for the application that you're specifically enabling on top of, we trust, the cloud to do XYZ.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Right? So you can sort of build on that and sort of, get the approvals that need to happen in order to, turn on the switch and say, we're live.
Gotcha. And now, does this ATO, is this applied to, so let's say you get that first pass, right? You can do this in Azure. Not necessarily a specific workload, but general.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is
sure.
That across multiple government agencies, or is that per agency? Like, how many of these do you end up having to be involved in?
That's a great question. So there is a organization, it's called FedRAMP.
Oh, yes.
FedRAMP.
Okay.
Right? So FedRAMP is actually in charge of these ATOs, and they sort of help organize, whether working with the actual cloud service provider, and there's other ones besides Microsoft.
Yep.
And we go in there, and we sort of have these, sort of things that need to be met in order to meet the various workloads for low, like moderate, and high, right? So those are sort of the categorization of it, but with that becomes a lot more stringent control, right? So you can have, let's say, for moderate, you need to have ADFS set up. Maybe
right.
For something else, you need to have ADFS with replication in two different areas and a smart card.
Got
those types of
okay.
things, right? So those are all the sort of requirements that your application has to sort of make sure it maintains and doesn't break. As part of the Azure contract that you have there, but really FedRAMP helps with that, and it allows sort of the cloud to move into the government in a really consistent way, and that's great segue for and great point, Evan.
Well, so that means when Azure got the FedRAMP, I don't know if certification is the right word. I guess sometime last year maybe, or that basically that's kind of maybe not exactly, but in some ways a, you know, a global ATO. Is that the right way to think about that,
or is that taking it
too far? Okay.
Yep. No, absolutely. Yeah. So it would be, let's say, certified for that workload, right? Mm-hmm. You know, in order so you will then, you know, be able to run those workloads in there. Now, the other thing that's interesting, right, is that we didn't really talk too much about the features that are available in Azure Government, mm-hmm. but really we're using ASM, right? We're using the Azure Service Manager APIs. So you kind of rewind maybe 3 years in, like, maybe more in how you would create VMs and things like that. There's no ARM, right? So,
right.
But with that, you know, so in order to certify things, they take longer, right? And yep. And Azure Government, when you call, like, in PowerShell or whatever, you would actually call the Get Azure Environment, you see an environment show up that's other than the commercial one. So when you call it, you know, Get Azure Environment, you see Azure Cloud, you see Azure U.S. Government, you may see the China Cloud, you know, and other sort of real environments that are in there. And each one of those environments has different endpoints that you would sort of call in order to work with it. So there's really a different number of services that are in there, and then the ones you use may not be FedRAMPed. So you have to sort of, you know, sort of thread that needle and make sure that you're deploying building systems that are FedRAMPed, that will be FedRAMPed by the time they launch, and have all the certifications in place in order to meet the customer's needs, the U.S. government.
Right. Okay.
Now, Aaron, why is it that you're still on ASM? Is it just because it's so difficult to get these things certified, it takes longer?
No, I mean, there's some RPs in there, you know, like you can call, you know, like a Get Azure RM account or those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the RPs aren't there yet, right?
Okay.
You know, they're coming, right? And then with that, one would think that you'd get the new portal, right? Because the portals, so it's like things are kind of tied together, right? So ASM, you know, you have the AUX portal where you can do things, and you have PowerShell and the CLI. As well, but now, you know, in order to have the, you know, brand new portal, you, with all those capabilities, they're built on these RPs,
mm-hmm.
right? These resource providers that allow you to do things like, you know, storage and you know, all these other, you know, storage and services and websites and things like that, and networking specifically, right? Like the core stuff, that is handled by ARM. So it's really sort of, there's a little bit of a difference there, and you know, I've been sort of living in the past to some degree when I'm working with, you know, what's in Azure Government. But it's challenging, but it's also fun to kind of, you know, figure out what you can do. You can't play with the latest and greatest stuff, but you can really kind of, you know, put together some pretty interesting solutions for our customers.
Yeah, and I'll say, Sujeet, because I'm kind of involved in, you know, I'll end up supporting, you know, some of these cases sometimes when they come through on the Azure Government side, not directly, and we have a team that kind of owns that, but just from a consultative perspective. And so some of these conversations we have, and we're really working hard trying to figure out how do we deliver the same rev, in essence, of the services that we have in our public or our commercial Azure cloud into our government cloud as well, right? So we don't want Aaron to always live in the past today, to some extent. He absolutely does, but we are working. I know our engineering teams are working really hard to figure out how to bring all that up, because, you know, there's some great services and features that, like Aaron said, they just can't use yet.
Now, sorry, go ahead, Aaron.
Oh, yeah, and just I think that big hurdle is ARM.
Yep.
Right? So once ARM services can be deployed, you know, it's I think they're just going to come fast and furious. And then you have to think about, from a certification perspective, you know, our certification process is probably pretty old too. And I know there's some work that, you know, all the cloud service providers are doing to try to amp up the pace for certifying things. So you could certify a platform, and then the services built on there, you kind of trust the cloud service provider to do the right thing a lot of times. And then you can sort of start getting these out to our customers quicker.
Now, in the actual Azure data centers, is there a separate, like, building or a cordoned off area? Is that how they treat it?
Yeah. So I mean, you know, looking at the sort of the documentation for Azure Government, like, there is a physical and network isolated instance. So it is a completely separate instance from Azure, and only U.S. qualified, you know, government organizations use it, and there's U.S. personnel that operate them. So it is a different data center. And you need to be, you know, screened and things like that. So, yeah, it's something there. And the other thing that's interesting is if you call, like, get Azure location,
mm-hmm.
the locations you get are USGov Iowa and USGov Virginia. So, you know, it's not East U.S., it's not East U.S. 1 and, what you know, Central or whatever. There's actually specific data centers that you'd want to deploy to. And if you need redundancy, you know, geo-redundancy, you're going to need to deploy to both.
Right,
sort of, you know, leverage that capability. So, yeah, they're definitely separate.
Yeah, I was going to say, even to add on that, I mean, everything is separate. So, for Express Route, right, one of the products I know a lot about, we've actually got totally separate routers, you know, totally separate, you know, sites for and a totally separate group of people that manage those devices, like Aaron was saying, versus our commercial stuff, right? So it's, I mean, I don't know if you could say it's, I don't know if it's completely right to say it's a, you know, it's a total mirror, right, of the org with a totally isolated group. But that's, in one way, you could probably think about it that way, right? It is just pick everything up, duplicate it, and then drop it in a different physical location. And that's really what you're
talking
about.
Different portals, too.
Yep.
So the portal's separate and, you know, different ADs in order to access the portals and things like that, too.
And that's even true for some of the internal tooling that we use, right? There's some interfaces I use to go get data from the platform. There is a different interface for our government clouds than from our commercial clouds, right? Completely independent worlds.
No, from the public access side, is it any different, or are there something special with regard to the Azure Government Cloud?
Like, you're saying security, like outside coming in, you mean?
Yeah, like in terms of security and SSL, you know, all those other things. Is that just standard?
One thing that's interesting that I've noticed, you know, dealing with, you know, the government and the government cloud is that it is a really big deal to make sure that your customer, your local, you know, enterprise is connected to the cloud, right? So it's really, you know, it's very important that there is an internal network there. Of course, there's going to be maybe, you know, some external sites, and that's going to be no different. You're going to hit a different endpoint, right? Like, for example, like at the Azure websites, is azurewebsites.us.
Mm.
Right, so that's kind of like a little bit different. You know, when you look at like the traffic managers, like usgovtrafficmanager.net. Right, so there's different, you know, DNS names, but really, you know, a client would then connect to a service externally, you know, no differently, especially if it's unauthenticated, right? In that regard, but a lot of the customers, you know, there's a lot going to be happening behind the scenes between the customers' internal data centers and their Azure data centers. So the virtual networks really, you know, you have to make sure that you design your virtual networks in a way that you have an internal network and you have an external network, right? And, you know, never the two shall meet. You know, you don't route between them, you know, because, you know, you really have these application boundaries and these boundaries between environments that you have to be careful of, right? I mean, because it's, you know, you're dealing with, you know, people's data, right? And it's very important to
our make data,
sure that
my data.
Exactly, yeah.
Your data, all of our data.
And then, for all these government organizations.
And that's sort of what I meant with the security. You know, are there additional checks? Like, they must be having, I don't know, whatever, intrusion detection and all up the gazoo over there.
Oh, yeah, sure. As part of that ATO process, that's really great, you know, to bring that back is that the in order to, like, certify that you can run an app in that environment, right, if it has authentication, it has to pass penetration tests and things like that, right? I mean, that's going to be very important in order to, you know, scan the code for security and things like that, that when you're deploying it. So you try to do as much as you can to lock down the environment and, you know, and have it secure enough when you're deploying it that you're not going to, you know, run into those issues. But, you know, those are the sort of ongoing scans and auditing. Right, so auditing is extremely important when you start talking about, you know, security and environments and across multiple cloud vendors, you know, from a customer perspective, you have to start thinking like, okay, if someone, you know, spins up a VM over here, like, how do I make sure I know about it, right? Mm-hmm. And in Azure, you know, in the portal, the new portal, we have that great, like, you know, the audit log, right, that tells pretty much everything that happened when you have that, and that's gold information for IT to make sure that they know exactly what's going on in a cloud service.
Okay. Now, let's say there's a new government organization that wants to move their current workload to the cloud, right? What's the steps that they have to go through besides, some of this ATO certification and stuff like that?
Sure.
What is there something different that in terms of moving existing government applications to the cloud?
Well, so first they would need to have the government Azure instance, right? So as part of their enterprise agreement, they would then sort of, connect in and they would, the government customer would then, create the global account that's there. And there's some links that I'll share that have that describe sort of the account structure for a government account, but you can really have a hierarchy here where you have, a global admin, and then you have departments, and then the departments you then have, subscriptions themselves, and you would then, that's how you'd sort of like look at what you want to do. There's also a government trial that's out there to really start looking at, to sign up for a government institution before you even do any sort of, commitment to make sure that that's the right thing, for you as well.
I see. But like that's so if you have an existing ASP.NET application or a web application, moving that up to Azure government is no different than regular Azure, correct? It's just you go through the
Yeah.
normal process of doing that. Do they have any particular separation of boundaries? Like, does the database tier have to be different from the web tier? Or, are there any other such needs or requirements that the Azure, that the government organizations impose?
Right. So, that's depends on, the different governments that you're looking at. What's nice is that once you're in an external network, sort of, isolated from the actual customer entity, you do the best practices. You have your SQL Azure, you have your, you have your Azure websites or web apps that you then can deploy to. So the nice thing is that when you're building with Visual Studio or you have your application, you can run locally. Then you can then just deploy it using the IDE. You're just pointing to a different environment, and you would then send that up there in order to do that. You also you can also lock down in the Azure web apps. You can added something to your web config that actually locks down the IPs that can access it, right? So you could only have it accessible through the from the customer's sort of proxy server or whatever it is, and you can lock down some applications that way. And of course with SQL Azure, we try not to allow even the endpoint itself. Like you wouldn't necessarily want to do management and have a bunch of people poking holes out to go out to SQL Azure with their SQL Management Studio. Typically what we're doing, we're building applications, we're trying to make sure that there's sort of like a like a JSON upload or something like that in order to make sure that all you have open is an HTTP endpoint, right? And that it's just to the one server that needs to have that access, and you lock it down with certificates to make sure that you're not that there's not really any way to sort of get access to it any other way. So there's definitely security is paramount in all these things, and there's like triple checking on making sure that when you deploy an application that you're doing the right thing. And sometimes it takes a little bit longer in order to meet all those requirements, but I think it's the right thing to do.
Aaron, it would seem that, I mean, a lot of stuff you're talking about here are features that exist in commercial Azure as well, right? Just not as many people take advantage of them. Are we do we have things that we've maybe only implemented, like kind of the other way around, where we've only implemented them in Azure government because it's a special thing there, or really is everything that you're talking about that the government customers do, and again, it's in an isolated data center stuff. Commercial customers can do all of this stuff because it's just using standard Azure capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you start getting down, I think it's really about the security. Like, for example, like maybe an actual endpoint encryption level, like
Right.
TIPS one whatever 140.2 or 120.2 or
Yeah.
whatever it is, those types of things, like the actual endpoints, meet those requirements. Those might be sort of more locked down in an Azure government environment.
Right.
But really, as encryption levels sort of, get better and better and better, right? There is a possibility that the commercial instance could in fact be more secure. And that's the other thing I wanted to talk about briefly is the fact that just because you're Azure, just because you're a government customer does not mean you have to run in Azure Government. And that's an interesting, you know, point. You'd think, oh, well, you know, I'd have to go there. But we have, you know, we have customers, multiple customers that have environments in both. We have a customer even using what you talked about, the dev test labs.
Yep. So and, how do they, like, I guess, how does that work? I mean, that seems like that's the whole point of Azure Government. You know, is it just because if they don't need to meet, you know, whatever, you know, the security requirements, then they're not required to be in that space? And so then they can just leverage the commercial?
So yeah, so like if thinking about isolated environments, right? If the environment isn't sort of you know touching the actual you know customer you know government entity and everything, then you know but really when you're talking about like ExpressRoute and VPN, you know it's a good idea to you know and it's been sort of suggested a lot of times that the you'd want to go ahead and you know connect to Azure Government you know for those just making sure that we're you know everything is you know within the government entities because you don't really you're not sure what your workloads are going to be at that point so that's something to look at but really you know when something's completely isolated in that regard so for example like what happens if you don't have if you don't have a access like government access like an actual like ID. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you get hired and then you don't necessarily have access to things. You could work, log into sort of a, like a pseudo environment that allows you to do stuff, you know, for your customer, without necessarily logging into, you know, a locked down, you know, government entity. So,
right.
It's interesting, you know, and then other things, like, let's say, for example, the requirement is I need dev test labs. Well, you may not want to wait until it lights up in Azure Government, and your requirement you're getting more benefit because you're understanding what that you know what the security of your data is. And the nice thing is that you know FedRAMP was supplied for both government and commercial. When you look at the actual like the certification that's there, it's government and commercial that were sort of granted FedRAMP certification, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So when you start, you know, thinking about that, you know, it's sort of something to look at when you're deciding, you know, do you need to run those, you know, higher level workloads, and do you need the, you know, the actual Azure Government, you know, capabilities that data center is going to provide.
Yeah. Cool. No, that's great. So, you know, assuming there's, you know, some folks listening to us right now, I guess they just need to. I mean, where do they need to go to get started on this stuff, or do we just give them your email? Is that the trick?
Yeah, just give them my email. So blogs.msdn.microsoft.com/AzureGov is a great place to talk about, you know, when we start lighting up services, or you'll see, you know, kind of excitement around, you know, like SSDs or, you know, new VM, you know, classes and things like that, or you know, encryption, or whatever it is, you'll see excitement in that, and you can probably keep current about what's going on there. As well as there's a link that you'll provide that has sort of how to connect to Azure Government for the first time using PowerShell and you know, and CLI and those types of things in order to sort of, you know, if you do have an account, how do you sort of get going with that?
Okay.
No, Aaron, real quick, is the cost structure a lot different between the two?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
You know, there may be some differences. I'm not sure, you know, how that goes because it's typically, you know, linked to like an EA account and us
right.
guys and services.
Well, I'm thinking that we're doing, it seems like we're doing a lot more for Azure Government, right, in terms of physical security and whatnot. So
I'm
expecting it to be a little more expensive, but I don't know. Yeah, just check.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, you may be able to offset some of those costs with, like, you know, bring your own licenses.
Right.
You know, when you start having entities and sort of, you know, linking up your VMs and you know, looking at the cost there.
So any gotchas that you face specific to Azure Government? You know, you worked with some customers already. Is there things that surprise you as they move to the cloud, or was it the same kind of issues that we face in Azure Commercial?
Well, one thing that's interesting is that you have to be very, very cautious about where your data lies. So there's two things that I would love to see, you know, lit up. One is Application Insights. Actually, three. Application Insights, OMS, Operations Management Suite, you know, because all this, like, log auditing and processing and things like that, we need that. We need to be able to work through that data. And then the last one is Visual Studio Team System. Right? So team services. So, like, being able to have, because I, as I said, I was working with ALM, you know, it would be great to be able to just, you know, point to instances that are in Azure Government that are able to be, you know, used by the government institutions that need that level of security, and not sort of spend a lot of my time spinning up and, you know, installing on-prem TFS servers. Nothing's wrong, you know, the great features that they have there, but it would be great to be able to, you know, just onboard those customers that want to take advantage of the DevOps capabilities that are there.
Got it. Well, that's good. That's some nice information and feedback there. Well, Aaron, I think that's all we have for him, right, Evan? Any more questions?
No, that was great. You know, it's really neat to hear that, you know, our own government, right, is leveraging and taking advantage of some of these, you know, the cloud capabilities. Right? There is hope for them still.
Well, I think Aaron also demystified the whole thing with Azure Government nicely, right? I always thought it was a big black box, and now we know it's not that big a black box, or not that black a box.
No, mine's better.
It's big, it's just not a black box, yeah. Yeah, no, great. Thank you very much, Aaron.
Yeah, sure, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Darren.
Take it. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.